Welcome to Stories and Stanza. I'm happy to have you here. I'm a writer and I created this podcast to bring out real stories that make life as beautiful as poetry. I'll take you on a journey through the human experience, sharing stories and conversations to uplift your spirit. Whether you are a lover of literature or someone who enjoys a good story, Stories and Stanza may be the place for you. This is another episode of the In Author's Chair segment, where we talk to writers about their work, motivation, and challenges. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Bella Elwood Clayton for today's episode, and let me know what you think. Hi, Bella, and good afternoon, and welcome to Stories and Stanza.
Thank you, Obro. It's lovely to be here.
Thank you for joining, and I have created this segment called In Author's Chair, where I talk to writers, find out about their work, their inspiration, and their challenges, so that it can motivate others, and it also gives the writers space to, you know, promote their own work and talk about it, and create a placeholder and that they can also share as a showcase of their work. Okay, so thank you for taking the time to talk to me. For our listeners, could you give a brief introduction, please?
Yes, well, my name is Bella Elwood Clayton. That's my writing name. I also have a sort of mom name, so I've got two sort of personalities going on, but today we'll be talking about Elwood Clayton self, which is my publishing name. I have a background in sexual anthropology, so I sort of balance a few different worlds with my work. I do academic work, I do editing and book coaching, and then my greatest love is writing fiction.
That is wonderful. And today we are going to talk about your book, Weekend Friends, yes?
Yes, thank you.
So can you give a summary of your book, please?
Sure. The tagline is, "For girls, the tween years are like the Hunger Games. For their mothers, it's worse." I'm not sure if you want the description as well. I think I might just do that too.
Yeah, sure, please. Yeah.
Okay, so food photographer Rebecca and her tween daughter Willow move from Alaska to Boca Raton, leaving behind their terrible secret about the death of Rebecca's husband. They're ready to start anew in the warmth of the Sunshine State, hoping it will vanquish Willow's night terrors. But as her daughter becomes controlled and bullied by the popular group KISS, Rebecca is drawn closer to the charismatic head of school, Mr. Brady. A hot and steamy, though uncertain, relationship begins, and soon lies, deception, and secrets cause everything to spiral out of control. Full of dark twists and turns, Weekend Friends will make you grateful you're no longer a tween or the parent of one.
That is a powerful summary.
Thank you.
Can you briefly tell about the research and the thinking behind this book?
Oh my gosh. Well, it was sort of a combination of things. There's two sort of central storylines happening in the book. There's the mother's storyline, who's dealing with her husband's death and this new relationship. And then there's her tween daughters, who's getting mixed up with a crowd of friends that are quite cruel. And while I was actually writing this book, my daughter was around the same age as the tween protagonist. So I was sort of tapping into things that were going on for her or her friends and the people that were coming into my life, and really looking at this social milieu of inclusion and exclusion, and how with social media, there's rising cyberbullying and how that's affecting young people.
Thank you. So as like there are two different perspectives in this book, what do you think are the strongest emotions that you have focused on?
Thank you. I think the commonality there is, you know, the intensity of female friendships. And especially when you're young, your best friend, you know, the closeness you have can be as intense as a love affair. But there's so much pain involved when this can be severed. There's a wonderful book called Odd Girl Out, The Hidden Culture of Aggression in Girls by Rachel Simmons. And she writes, unlike boys who tend to bully acquaintances or strangers, girls frequently attack within tightly knit friendship networks, making aggression harder to identify and intensifying the damage to victims. And she often calls this, she calls this kind of behavior outcasting. So girls, she says, often fight with their body language and relationships instead of fists and knives. And in this realm, friendship is a weapon, and the sting of a shout pales in comparison to a day of someone's silence. There's no gesture more devastating, she says, than the back turning away. So that was the heart of the child situation that I was looking at, and then how that can get magnified with social media and not feeling included in things, and then really looking at the rise of child suicide and how it's connected to these types of things. That's where the book ended up taking me.
Thank you. And your professional experience, did that play a part in doing this research and the preparation for the book?
Yeah, thank you. It's a great question. And I think without really consciously doing, you know, focusing on it as research and doing the skills that I've learned over the years, I just took it I was very careful in gathering facts about, you know, what happens with young people when they're getting depressed about friendship issues and what signs can you look out for. And I just wanted to make it realistic. So, and then also just even researching the setting, the book starts off in Alaska with this family, and then they move to Florida. So I was doing a lot of YouTube research, you know, looking at walking tours of the streets of Boca Raton, so I could see for myself what it's really like there. So I suppose I just wanted to really get the details right, from kind of academic things to things like, you know, what's their favorite drink in Boca Raton? What are people doing while they're at the beach? Are they, you know, is there sharks? Like all those types of environmental details.
That is a great idea. I'm sure to make a note of that. I generally write poetry, but every time I talk to an author, I learn something and I have a notebook and say, okay, this is my takeaway.
Thanks. And it's really great too with these YouTube walking tours, because just ordinary people seem to now, you know, they'll just hold their camera up and they might walk for half an hour around a few streets or, you know, a neighborhood and film it. So you can see every store that's passing and the people walking by and the dogs, and you can actually really get a very good sense of place. I had a few people reach out to me from Florida, readers, saying that I captured it correctly. And I just, that felt like such a great success that I've never been to Florida. Although now I feel like I have, because I've spent so much time, you know, walking around the streets cyberly.
That is really, really wonderful. And that validation, I'm sure that helps that you did your research right.
It really did. Yes, thank you. It's a big check. Didn't mess up in that regard anyway.
Right. Would you be able to read something from your book?
Sure. Thank you. Let me just flip open here. This is going to be a chapter from the daughter's point of view. And the book's only about 15% or maybe 10% in her point of view. But I think the scene speaks to a few of the issues in the book. Okay. So it's the daughter, Willow, and Katia, who's the leader of KISS. Katia is staring at me. Oh my gosh, look. What? Touch your thigh, she says, with a weird squinty look on her face. Why? Just do it. She smiles like it's all a joke, but I know she wants me to do it for real. I look up in the gold-lit mirror and lift my dress. Then I study my thigh. I've never looked at it before and thought thigh as one single thing cut off from the rest of my body. There's hair on it and veins and a purple bruise. I pinch the upper bit and squeeze. Gross, right? Katia says. I guess. I didn't realize I had fat like that on my thigh. So squishy. Katia's right, it is gross. Stella's is disgusting too, Katia says. She doesn't follow my diet. Her BMI is bad. I don't know what BMI is, but I'm not going to ask. Katia raises her leg, propping her foot on the counter ledge. She runs her hand over her own thigh, tanned, tiny, perfect looking. You want to be part of KISS, right? I nod. Me and every other girl at Aqua Vista wants to join, and she knows it. When you pinch your thigh, there can't be any fat, she demonstrates. Okay, I fidget with the hem of my dress. I'm trying to help you. That's why I have you send me your calories for everything you eat. It's been annoying doing that and weird, but Katia said it was stage one.
It's a brilliant section from the book. Thank you for sharing that.
Oh, thank you so much. And I must say that happened to my friend, my daughter's friend at school. They were in grade two, I believe. And one of the girls said to my daughter's best friend, pinch your thigh. And then she did. And she said, well, I'm not going to be friends with you if you have fat there. So I really was taking, there's a lot of moments throughout the book that I'm literally taking from real life and then just adding it into this narrative because I was so disturbed by that.
Yes, that's why I'm saying that it's like a sudden mirror that, okay, this is where the teens are. And that comes as a very powerful narrative in the book, I think.
Thank you.
Can you tell me a little bit about your writing discipline, as in how long did you take to, you know, research for the book and then write it and then finish it? You said that you do a little editing as well. So how did you edit your own book and or did you work with others? So can I know a little bit more about your writing process?
Well, it took me about 5 years to get an agent, and I have a wonderful agent in America named Jill Marcel. So my writing sort of steps have changed since having her in my life. The first stage is me brainstorming book ideas, and I'll send her about five usually. And I have them in like a paragraph at the back of a book, kind of, you know, I've done it sort of up so that you can read it like the back of a book, and it's the sort of tagline, and it really gives a feel of who the main character is and what it's all about. And what she's always looking for is something that's high concept, that I can describe the book in one sentence and people will think generally, oh, that sounds interesting, or that's a fresh take on something that's been done before. So I'm lucky enough to, you know, give her those maybe five book ideas. And often she'll say, you know, I don't think those are strong enough. And I'll go back to the drawing board. So it can take me a few months sometimes to come up with an idea that we both think is really promising, that has legs. And then the next stage is writing the first draft. In my previous books that I've worked on, I've painstakingly, like poetry, tried to build each sentence upon each sentence and make it perfect from the start, which takes a long, long time. And, you know, it isn't perfect because you end up scratching whole chapters, and it's more painful because you've built it up so carefully. So, for instance, in the book that I'm working on now, which is set in Cape Cod, it's women's fiction with suspense, I wrote the thing as fast as I could, which for me was about 6 months. And now I have a working draft. And even in my editing this time around, I'm forcing myself to go quickly from beginning to end rather than getting logged in the chapter, because I think we need to know our weaknesses in a sense as writers. There's a comfortable spot usually, you know, maybe some people love just making the most beautiful sentences, or other people are really great at coming up with the big structural ideas for a great plot twist at the end. But I think the way to step up our writing skills is to work in our weak areas. So I'm out of my comfort zone right now and doing things fast and looking at it as a macro. That's the quickest way I can make this tight. And it's a different lens. And I'm appreciating seeing the book differently. Usually I just see it within paragraphs and within chapters. And now I'm trying much harder to see the thing as a whole and analyze it and edit it as a whole. I hope that makes sense.
It sure does. And I mean, you have picked up such a complex subject, and there are so many perspectives. So I find that overall context really deep and interesting. And you mentioned that it looks and explores the bullying side of things and children suicide, etc. So could you share a little bit more about like what was the thinking behind that? Like, for example, what I mean, I was doing another author interview last week, and she's writing a book on, she has published a book on anti-bullying, and she's trying to capture both sides, like what it feels to be bullied and where does the bullying come from. So she's trying to create awareness on both side of the journey, and I wanted to understand from you, like, you have taken such a deep psychological dive into this process. So what were some of your thinkings in that space?
Thank you. I was really responding to news articles. So at the time of writing, there was a Canadian study that showed an unprecedented spike in suicide deaths among young girls. It was the Canadian Journal of Psychiatry, and it showed that suicide among girls aged 10 to 14 was surging for the last 9 years. And the lead author was saying that it's highly atypical for females to die by suicide more than males in this age group. And the two main contributing factors were girls hitting puberty at younger ages, and also the influence of social media, which I don't think is so much of a surprise. And it might not necessarily be the bullying and the hate messages that girls get in itself, because always, I think, you know, when young women are fighting, there's been this going on. But it's the fact now that if there's a phone and the young girls are receiving these messages, it can be, it's not just at school, it's not just when you see a person and they're nasty to you, it can be on late at night. You can wake up in the morning and there's a message from someone you thought was your friend saying something awful to you. It can be a girl just scrolling through her Snapchat and seeing images of all her friends at a party that she wasn't invited to. And these things built up and built up, I really think, have a very strong factor in starting to think about suicide.
I cannot agree more on that. I am a father to a daughter myself.
Oh gosh, yes. Yeah.
She's about to go to high school next year, so I see that emotional ups and downs all the time.
Yes, that's right. And, you know, it's always been hard to grow up, but now with this comparison culture for adults alike, you know, it's making people feel like they're less than, and that's what I think we need to work on. My adult character in the book, Rebecca, she's finding some of her happiness in sensual pleasure. She has this racy relationship with the school principal, and so I'm kind of balancing in the book there, you know, pain and joy, I suppose, and different ways of seeking, you know, happiness.
Yes, two very different perspectives, and
So it's like crossing at the same time. So it's quite fun to write because we had the, you know, super highs and then lows, and then the conflict between the mothers, and there have of course been things like, you know, Leanne Moriarty and Big Little Lies and that whole kind of mom drama. There's lots of books about that. However, I found it quite interesting how, you know, this sort of rage that women have towards their friends' daughters, as women get older, you know, it's just like inappropriate thoughts and feelings. But in this book, there's a little bit of exploration of that, as, you know, what do you do when your friend's daughter, you know, really crucifies your daughter emotionally? What happens then? How do the adults interact? So in the book, Rebecca and her friend Odell, when Rebecca moves to Florida, she bumps into this old friend from high school as well. So you've got a complex adult relationship going on and the daughters. And I think that's actually quite true to life. I think, you know, if you have a group of moms and their daughters growing up, say through middle school and high school, there's going to be conflict and some drama. And we ideally want to learn as women how to communicate with each other when things aren't going great. and sometimes be upset and angry and find a way to communicate without it escalating. You know, I do think it can be a bit tricky for women to bring up with each other what they're upset about and just talk about it and hear each other's side of the story. It's a skill we need to work on.
Definitely. I'm curious to know what feedback have you got around the book, like, because you have two different perspectives coming together. Did you hear from your readers on the book?
I think that they weren't. Readers generally have responded that they weren't expecting it to go where it did. The cover of the book is quite fun and friendly, and the title is Weekend Friends. So it's actually, it's kind of a strange mix. And this is the way that I like to write. I like to talk about very intense topics, sometimes traumatic topics, but within the book, I also, you know, there's often a romance subplot, and there's some racy sex scenes usually, and there's banter between people and a bit of comedy. So I think that might be a bit unusual, having trauma and comedy and sex in one packed book. So I think the readers have definitely enjoyed it. And some have asked that there was trigger warnings on the front of the book for some of the difficult issues that it covers. However, I did talk to my publisher about that, and it was decided that might give away too much of the book. But yes, I think the surprise is like the whole range of trauma to laughter to sex. That's a lot. It was hard to weave it all together, but I had fun trying.
Definitely, it's hard to bring together. I would have loved to, you know, hear your poetry as well, but I didn't give you enough notice for that.
Yeah.
Maybe some other time, okay?
Yeah. Yes.
Yep. And I think we have come towards the end of our discussion. So if there is one advice that you would like to give yourself before you started the book, or in general to other writers who want to venture into this space, what would you say?
Well, I have to pause here because I keep saying this to writers and then I feel a bit guilty after, because you don't want to squash anybody's dreams. I will say, I think writing is an excruciatingly difficult career to make any headway in. I think it sucks up a lot of money, and you don't make a lot of money, and it's very hard to get anything published anywhere. So you have to absolutely be in love with it to bother. And if you're willing to up your craft and to be open to criticism, then it can be, it's the thing I love to do most. I love writing. I love being lost in my characters. I love revision. But the payback out there in the world, the tangible payback, is very hard to receive. So I think for writers, generally, I wouldn't advise it as your main gig. I would do something else as your main gig. And then slowly on the side, build up your craft. And if the world opens up for you and you get a massive deal and, you know, things go the way that you want, then you can make you can shift your priorities and realign your life. But to build a career on writing from scratch, I mean, it's like trying to get into the Olympics. It's very hard.
I cannot agree more on that. It is definitely really, really hard.
Yeah. So it doesn't take away. I mean, all the artists, the musicians and the painters, like, you know, it's what everyone has different reasons for doing things. But if we are doing it for great commercial success in a financial or recognition way, it's very, very few who get that. But if it's something that's sort of, you know, more measured and on the side that you build up, I think you've got a better shot. And maybe the goal is something like, you know, I just want to get, a few short stories published, or, you know, one day I want to write a novel till the end. That's fine. But this huge idea of being a successful writer, I mean, yeah, it's just, I would love to see the actual statistics. Actually, I probably wouldn't. So that's my, I know it's a little bit, it's not maybe inspiring, or it's not what people want to hear, but that is what I think.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to Stories and Stanza.
Abra, it was my absolute pleasure. Thanks for chatting with me too.